Testing, great. So did you, you guys were looking for that Z guy, right? The guy, Shmieski, right?
Yeah. I think he has a site called Faceboard.
Yeah, Faceboard. Yeah. I'm glad everyone could join us here today. It's encouraging to see a crowd here. I know there's a Zuckerberg downstairs chatting, but I think we have some interesting things to talk about today. So pretty excited about the panel we have here today. I'm Brian Shmieski. I'm the chief instigator at Lucky Oliver. To my left here is Jeremy Britton. He's a partner at Zurb, and he has been doing design strategy for the last 4 years at Zurb. And to the far left, we have Christina Wadke. Christina, you have a book coming out. You are the lead UI at LinkedIn.
Inaccurate on every count.
Okay.
I have a book that came out a few years ago. I'll be signing later at 4:45 in the bookstore. And I am actually gone over to the dark side. I've become a product manager at LinkedIn.
Okay.
But I was a UI and information architect for many, many, many years.
You're also lead up Boxes and Arrows.
I am the publisher of Boxes and Arrows. So my heart is still with the design community.
And to her right is Luke Roblowski. Or Blusky, I'm sorry, Polak here, and I can't even say his name. He's the senior principal at Yahoo and also has his own design studio, Luke W. And he also has a book coming out. What's the name of the book?
Web Form Design, which I have a coupon for if you guys want to come up. Everybody do their shameless plugs now.
15% off. That's
there
money.
You go. Yeah, it's money.
Great. So the format here this afternoon is we're basically going to have five main points. I'm going to kind of do a lead in here and discuss a little bit about logos, set the problem up, and then I'm going to open it up to each one of these guys here to kind of put their two cents in. And then if you have anything you'd like to try and bring up to us during our points, go ahead and get to the mic and bring up a point. We want to get you guys engaged in the conversation. So we'll have about five main points here that we'd like to get across. So at any point during that time you want to jump into it, that would be great. So.
And because we're recording this, please do try and get to the mic. So if you ask on a non-mic, we won't hear you.
Great. So I'm going to do a history of the logo. I'm going to try and do it in one page here. So back way, 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 way when people drew pictures on caves, and that is the target symbol, actually. skipping forward millions of years, we have the Bass logo, which was one of the first trademarked logos, and about the time of mass production of things, and it serves today as their logo, a red triangle. And then you have now, which is Apple. So the history of the logo is really pretty much from the beginning of time, as people have created icons and images that represent, in this case, a company. In that case, might have been a group of people. For those that aren't familiar with a brand mark, there's two major components of it. There's the logo, which is the symbol or icon that represents a business or a product. And there's a logotype, is the thought and treatment that's used to actually type out the name of the business. You know, if we look just basically at kind of setting up the problem here and talking about the logo, there's three main things that you need to be concerned about when looking at a logo and what impact it has on your business. The first is kind of thinking about the fact that there's printing involved and costs involved in actually getting materials of that together, and there's a money factor that's involved in that, whether it's dealing with a designer that's actually going to be spending the time on it, or getting lots of people in a room to talk about it. That is time, which is money. The second part is the time, which in most businesses, when they're starting up trying to get a product to market, time is a big factor in that. So the logo development takes time to articulate what the business goals of a business are. And the third is momentum, is that in most early stage businesses, momentum is the biggest factor in trying to get a product to market with people on your team getting excited about launching a product. So all those are all the costs of actually getting a logo going for your business. So the first point here we want to try and set up here is that the logo has been around for ages. You know, we're talking cave drawings But it wasn't really until the Industrial Revolution where the logo started playing a big role in companies. For the most part, when you had local vendors selling products like soap, with the Industrial Revolution, you needed to communicate that this soap was from somewhere else and it had a mark on it. Businesses started realizing in order to distinguish their product, they needed some type of mark. Around the turn of the century and up to about the 1950s, this concept, people started putting more about the perceptions of a brand and the desirability of a brand into a mark, which transcended basically marking the product itself. By the 1990s, we were looking at the dreaded term of integrated marketing, the concept that you have lots of different pieces of your marketing effort and it was all tied together by a logo. The website was only one component of that. The website played a role as tying all those integrated pieces together. Now, what we found is that, you know, really we're website driven in most people's marketing efforts as a central focus around their website. Even if they're a product based business, the website becomes a central focus of that. So the first question we're going to kind of open up the panel here is, you know, in this process of going from manufactured goods to digital products, you know, what role has the logo played in that, and does it play any more of a role? So Luke, why don't you?
Sure. So the one thing that I think is sort of telling of this transition is that you can get a logo from logoworks.com for $25, and it actually turns out relatively okay. But people are paying hundreds of thousands of dollars for URLs, sometimes even in the millions, right? So as you get into a situation where we're in this information age and the product or the service is kind of becoming the experience people have online or the site they have online or the application they have online, what role does a memorable kind of visual mark play versus a name, which is encapsulated in the URL, told to people, shared, linked from, you know, like the cachet of kind of cross-linking between these different properties and stuff? I think we're just seeing a transition of the overall value that a brand mark makes relative to the overall value that a good name or URL or digital identity makes. I think that value equation is kind of shifting a little bit.
There's another really interesting aspect, I think, that's coming out of that, is that we live in an age right now where we have Gucci bags being made in China and we have tons of spam coming in with the eBay logo or any other logos. When logos were first created, they were a signature. You know, you've got a brand that was put on cattle to say this belongs to somebody, or you know, a heraldic device that said I belong to this tribe. But now those have been utterly undermined by copying endlessly. So when you get a piece of information, instead of looking at the logo for truth, you end up looking at the from line. And suddenly you see it's eBay at I'mGonnaStealAllYourStuff.com, and you realize this is probably not true. So I think the URL has been supplanting the quality of truth instead of the way the logo used to stand for it.
Yeah, and I think, I mean, from a consulting standpoint, one of the things we try to do when we're actually coaching these companies through that early stage when they're still trying to find an identity, build their product, and, you know, find a name for themselves, is a memorable name is more important than trying to come up with some sort of visual to associate with that. And another element of that, too, is just having a findable site, too. I mean, you might associate the keyword term that you even, you know, search for to locate that site more readily with that company early on than with the, you know, the logo or something with it, you know, itself. So I think, I mean, that's sort of one of the key things. And then I think early on too, consistency is, you know, important all the way throughout. That's kind of what, you know, a logo exercise is. You want to be consistent across all the different places that people come into contact with you. But I think early on, it's a lot easier to be consistent when you start small. And, you know, doing the whole brand identity package is actually a pretty large exercise to try to get right from the start. So starting small, it makes it easier to be consistent, and then you build and grow.
Actually, so one other point that I would make with the naming versus the logo, I just wanted to kind of throw up to the panel, what about the whole notion of these crazy kooky names? Like, can you really talk about the information age as the, you know, and using terms as identifiers for things when we're literally getting misspellings, things which are not even words, and so on and so mm-hmm. forth. So any thoughts on that?
Well, you know, from our perspective, the Lucky Oliver as a name was created. It's a community-based stock photo site. The name itself typically resonates in people's head, and they can remember it in trying to differentiate our product and service from other companies in the same space. We avoided the word stock, which stock as a generic term could identify the service, but it didn't necessarily differentiate from the other businesses, and trying to come up with a word that embodied the brand more than just the service being offered. So, yeah, the name, you know, maybe somewhat kooky, but pulls into a story that can be told through the experience of the brand.
Yeah, and you also have the average statistics based on how many websites there are out there and how much time the number of people that are online spend on a site on average indicate that you have one time per month with each, you have 1.6 seconds once per month with each potential customer to convince them that your web service or what you have online is actually worth something. So is a logo mark actually going to create value in that situation? I know it's something to debate, but I think people will more likely associate things like the query term that they dumped into a search engine that led them to your product or service. They probably remember that more readily than a little, you know, symbol they saw on the site.
Right. I do think we actually probably should have brought up the fact that there is a frame that we're working in. Back when I worked at Yahoo and I was senior director of design there, I had this feeling of there's always enough time to get the design right, which I think, you know, we probably all like to think that. And then when I went up to a startup, I suddenly realized that every single hour that I had was going to either destroy my business or save my business, and I had to use it. And when you start thinking about a principle of scarcity, a logo, an hour you spend with your logo is an hour you're not going to spend writing the introductory text and getting that exactly right. It's an hour you're not going to spend getting that web form perfect so people sign up. And so I don't think we're, at least I'm not here saying I hate logos. I'm saying, don't you have something else to do with your time? Unless, of course, you're IBM, and then, you know, you can like refine and polish and make it beautiful. But if you're a little scrappy startup, my God, that those few hours you spend on a logo could be death.
But even IBM, I mean, back, does anybody here kind of count themselves a traditional designer? Few, okay. Do you guys get like full-on corporate redesign projects? I mean, there used to be a period of time where BP Amoco would come to a design engine and say, hey, we need to do a visual refresh. And it was a, you know, $25 million project, which took like 2 years. And at the end of it would be a whole series of style guides and brand stuff. In the meantime, their brand or their identity had sort of morphed online or in the public space organically, right? So by the time they caught up with this thing, other things were happening. So I just personally see a lot less of those sorts of engagements because they take a long time. They get kind of stale. And I wonder if people are seeing the value of those anymore, especially given the amount of money. And you said spend an hour on a logo. I think it goes a lot longer than that, right? Yeah. People spend countless hours iterating on logos and changing them and, you know, this is not quite right, let's try this and so on and so forth. So I think it's a big time suck if you get into it, especially if you don't know what the heck you're doing yet, right?
So kind of building off that, Luke, this idea that there's endless content on the web and that you've kind of moved from competing with a local market to now being able to access that content from anywhere in the world. I mean, how does the idea that you've got tons and tons of content, how important is actually having a brand mark on that content? You know, one of the things that it suggests is that the link itself becomes more valuable than the mark because it's an indication of your expectation of the content that you're going to get.
Or the source of the link, too.
Or the source of the link, correct.
Or the rank of the link within a search engine result, or the rank of the link within a social news site, or the quantity of things in a social bookmarking site, pointing to something.
So an example is, you know, how does this play into distribution and mashups of content? I mean, how important do you think the mark is? I'll open that up to all you guys.
So. Well, I think, I mean, it seems like the link is a little bit more important, and also just like the name that associates with it. You know, I was thinking, how do I even read Luke's blog? I use Google Reader, there's not even a fave icon or anything associated with that, but I know your name's like actually on there too. So I can, you know, I know where the source is. I know I can trust that and know where it's actually coming from. So there's lots of different little bits. You know, the icon doesn't really come into play here with the different services and everything we interact with online quite as much. I think of like Twitter, for instance, like I interact with that on my mobile phone. And to me, Twitter in that space is really 40404. You know, that's something that, you know, I sort of identify it with. That's where I know to go to be able to actually send my messages to it. You know, I never come across the fave icon or the logo in that context.
And for me, Twitter is the lolcat. I mean, when I think of Twitter, I don't think of the logo. I think of that cat that's in the servers again fixing the stuff.
Mm-hmm. So online, it's 404.
Yeah.
Exactly. How, I mean, when you're dealing with content sites and, you know, a site that's got millions and you show up from a search engine, I mean, how is the brand mark important to that experience? I mean, it could be, you could say that, you know, having a Yahoo logo on content is very important, but the vast majority of pages online are not Yahoo, right? So does it have an impact on, you know, the experience someone has in reading content?
Yeah. So BJ Fogg did a whole bunch of studies back in the day on what builds credibility, and the top two things were a well-organized visual presentation and a well-organized structure. I don't recall a brand mark being in there. So, and people, because of this limited time you have to make an impression on people in the digital space, I think things like the overall visual integrity and the structure of the page, does it seem kind of like it's professional? If not, I'm gone right away, right? I just sort of click off. So maybe the brand mark has a little bit of a connotation there, but maybe not so much. Yeah, I do think the favicon is a really interesting thing, because if you actually build out a favicon as a ICO file, you can build a whole bunch of different shapes and sizes and things like that, so it can mesh to a whole bunch of different contexts. That does seem to be missing in a lot of places. Things are reappropriated right now. There aren't too many standards beyond the favicon of how things get displayed in different contexts, and it would be really interesting to see some evolution in that space, right? Defining a little bit more of a visual representation of things in an ecosystem where things can get reappropriated, remixed, and distributed in lots of different ways.
Well, it's interesting you brought up the issue of credibility, which, you know, you sort of think the brand mark, it's a mark of sort of trust, you think, right? So one of the examples we're looking at is just phishing and PayPal. You get an email in it with the PayPal logo there, but that's actually, you know, there's a false association. You check for the link to validate that it's actually the company that you think is speaking to you. So in that case, I mean, that's an example where the link is actually more important than the mark.
So let's kind of move on here. You know, I guess a lot of people could say we're in the experience economy, and the experience economy is really this concept that it's no one piece of the whole puzzle that's setting a mark. It's the interactions that you're having with the customer. So take a cup of a plain cup of coffee, you know, 20 years ago, styrofoam, you know, take it or leave it, and you expected coffee. Now, you go to Starbucks and you expect all these things from your cup of coffee. I mean, you may not want to be hanging out in the place and listening to music, but there's all these other things of making sure it's tasty, the guarantee that you're going to be able to swap your drink. You can customize it. It's going to be quick. It's going to be consistent. All these pieces, you could argue, take a lot of time to get right. There's a lot of effort that's put in to trying to get these pieces in the experience right. And it's through evaluating and seeing and trying and testing and continuing to modify how that experience happens. So I guess I'd throw the question out here to you guys is, you know, when you're trying to build a company in 6 months, you know, with a product that you're trying to get out the door, you know, how important is it to put a mark on something that doesn't have a full-blown experience tested and used by users and gone through iterations to figure out what's going on? You know, is there a focus there that, you know, designers, interaction people, and business people should be focusing on, you know, when trying to conceptualize and put a product on the market?
Well, you know, I just went through an interesting experience. My husband has a startup. He does X-ray diffraction. He basically shoots X-rays through rocks and knows what kind of rocks they are, which is a little different than the people here. And he did his first logo in Word. He just wrote the title of his company, and he made the X orange and made it slightly bigger, and he was good for 2 years. And then one day somebody said, your logo is crappy, and maybe you should do something about it. And he went through endless iterations with this Belgian designer, and they sent it back and forth and back and forth and back and forth. He kept bringing them home to me. I'm like, why are you even bothering? Because the fact is that he's selling mostly to NASA and occasionally the Getty, and they really don't care. And I think that sometimes we do get caught up in some little thing that just gets in our way from doing what he really needed to do, which is try to figure out, you know, why the damn thing kept overheating and catching on fire, you know, as opposed to, you know, or coming home and making dinner, either one, really.
With x-rays, that might be important, yeah.
Things catching on fire, it's not a good idea.
Well, I like the Starbucks example because it raises a point and a counterpoint. The point is that a week ago, Starbucks closed all their stores for 3 hours, not to do a logo refresh or a brand refresh, but to really do a customer experience refresh. So they retrained everybody and said, here's how you actually make a decent cup of coffee. And that, I mean, that was a huge, expensive endeavor. But what they did was they said, we need to rethink the experience, rather rethink the way we visualize stuff. At the same time, I think in the offline world, the role of the brand mark has actually a much more apparent place. So, like, I'm out on the street. I see somebody with a white cup with a green mark on it. I'm like, there's a Starbucks near here, right? Mm-hmm. Where do I go and find it? Or I'm driving down the street. I see that iconic green thing. I'm like, oh, I can get coffee. So it really comes into place. But how does that actually transfer into the web applications and services where, I mean, you don't really encounter somebody with a coffee cup. Instead, you get a link or you get, you know, somebody, you see what your friends are doing in a particular context, a social network,
Something really fascinating out, though, is because when I first started in the business, it seemed like the word brand and the word logo were essentially interchangeable. And it feels like, to me at least, that the brand has totally overshadowed logo. Logo's just almost, again, just like a little signature or shortcut for it, but that all the time is spent on the completeness of the nature of the brand. And when you see a Target ad, you don't need that little, you know, bullseye at the end to know it's a Target ad. You've known it, you know, 30, 40 seconds into it already because the brand is so complete. And with Flickr, you don't have to see that little red and blue dot, pink and blue, excuse me, dots to know it's Flickr. It's Flickr. It looks like Flickr. It feels like Flickr. It acts like Flickr. And I think that the logo instead is embedded into every single interaction design decision as opposed to being just this little thing on the left.
No, I think that makes a lot of sense. I mean, from, you know, the standpoint, again, of working with startups. I mean, there's just so many things to focus on first that we like to kind of treat the logo design and the identity design as something that sort of wells up from just working on the application itself. So sometimes, and it's a great way to, when working with clients to avoid and diffuse kind of a loaded issue, which is trying to solve the big problem of what is our company's identity. Start small, actually just working through the interface. It could be inspiration coming from just color, something you're doing in the CSS, something the front end developer is actually working on. Chrome elements, you know, something in the header or a nice type treatment that feels like it's appropriate with it can be, like to Christina's point, enough to sort of stand in and be well enough for a while so that you can, again, keep your valuable time focused on, you know, connecting with people and building a core service that works. So.
Jumped in.
Up
one more. I was waiting for the next slide to make a fun point.
You know, just setting this one up here, you know, from the discussion and what you guys are saying, one thing that kind of pops into mind is you keep on using the word application. Well, what, you know, how many people are application developers? That, you know, it's kind of an interesting term because what you're really saying is you can't just have a website that's brochureware. There's lots of complexity to putting yourself online now and making it a memorable experience and thinking about how you use your website. It's not just about putting a contact form up there. It's about engaging customers and getting them to interact with you. I guess this is kind of the setup to the next point here is that, you know, where we're looking at startups and looking at internet companies and you're looking at new businesses, there's a tendency for everyone to want to sit in the room and kind of discuss how we move forward with the logo, colors, and an identity piece. And I guess the point here is that, you know, in some ways, interaction designers are setting the problem up for their companies in the wrong way, just by the way they present themselves to the public. The idea that you have an identity piece, a print piece, a web piece, an interactive, makes me as a hiring manager or someone think that that's the problems that I need to solve in my business. I'm curious to know what your experience, because I know everyone here has been involved in hiring and thinking about, you know, how are interaction designers in this case setting up the problem of how important a logo is in a business?
I absolutely love this slide because every single portfolio that gets sent to me has this sort of structure. And so it's like, why interactive and web? Two separate sections, right? Here I do things that are interactive, and here I do things that are on the web. Or other times they have like a separate thing that's motion graphics or video and all this stuff. But it's also kind of telling that identity is separate from web or interactive. So, okay, here's where I worked on a logo, totally in isolation of the product, and here was all the revs and things I did. And then over here is where I worked on the actual product experience and what the site is. But those are two separate things in my world. Versus the process of working through what the product or service is going to be. And as a result, something kind of emerges that becomes an identity for it. And the last point I'll make on here, which is kind of ironic, when I do get these things, I actually go to the logo section to see if the designers have a sense of style, taste, you know, white space, balance, things like that. I kind of go there to get a sense of what they do.
What do you think people use the word identity as opposed to logo? Do you think there's a reason for that?
Yeah, I think it means logo plus. I can put it on letterhead.
It's logo, logo plus business card.
I know where it goes on the business card. It goes on the left. I got to say, I have to geek out a little bit because as a former information architect, you know, that's what my book is, so buy it and go to the book signing or something like that. This is all about a taxonomy. And what's interesting is people fall into this. I'm going to put identity here, and I'm going to put web here, and I'm going to. But this is all about telling a story about yourself. And I think, to speak to your earlier point, identity shouldn't be the separate thing. Identity should be coming out of the entire interaction design. What if identity was how long your form was, or the way your submit button worked? Why is identity this separate thing? It's like saying, here's my body and here's my personality, and I'm going to put them in two different, you know, places in the navigation. Or, you know, it doesn't work that way. And I think this is really a false way of taking it apart. And I think that's why logos are almost forcing themselves to be irrelevant, because they are no longer integrated into an overall sense of the nature of the brand, as long as they are that sort of like afterwards pretty thing. So I think when you're telling a story about yourself, which is what a navigation really is, it's not there for people to navigate by. It's actually to tell you what you're all about. Then that's not the story you want to be telling.
So, you know, kind of looking at that discussion kind of comes up is, well, why do designers and interaction designers separate the two? I guess my hypothesis would be that identity is really controlled by the designer, and the limitations and scope of it seem to be somewhat controlled by the designer, where the web and interactive components are a team effort of lots of people coming together. So to Luke's point in looking for, well, what is this person capable of doing, you know, you're going to the identity piece because this seems like something a single person could do as opposed to a team. Which in some ways could be a wrong way of looking at it, because a well-crafted identity is probably something that involves a lot of people thinking about the parts of the business. So just kind of throw that out there. I don't know if anyone had any more comments on that.
Cool. I would like to throw out a question to you guys. So we've made a few points here about why logos might be deemed irrelevant. Anybody out there want to call bullshit? Okay. Stand up and talk. Because actually, when I first heard, you know, the theme of the panel, that was kind of what I thought. Yeah. I'm like, huh? But you know, there are definitely some interesting topics in this as you start getting into the digital swirl. So I'd love to hear a counterpoint or two. Yeah.
Besides, in the speaker thing they handed out, they said fight. So.
Right. So I'm going to take some, and then we're going to do a couple more, and keep being able to roll questions in here. So why don't you go ahead?
Okay. I really question what you guys are. I mean, I can hear what you're saying about if you're a startup business, you know, keep your perspective, don't spend your time on the wrong things. But to say the logo is completely useless, I mean, you guys are sitting in front of nine of them. Okay, why is it? You know, there could be a white card up there that says in plain Arial type, Dell, IFC, Austin Chronicle, SXSW Interactive. Why? You turn around and look.
I know, but
I mean.
So how many of these are logo types versus logos?
Yeah, it just seems to me.
I see one logo.
right?
No, I see Yaris, I see Light, I see Fuse, I see... I mean, okay, maybe I'm lumping logo and logotype together, but still, to a lot of people, logo and logotype are kind of used interactively. Yeah. I mean, you know, not...
So, I won't speak for everybody. I'm definitely not saying they're useless, but I am saying in a digital context, there may be things where you might want to put your money more than in the... Because, like, in all honesty... Right now, the average American sees 3,000 advertisements per day on just everything. You called out seven of them. If we actually got in and started really looking at how many of them. So is that really having an impact on us? Is it just creating more noise that makes it more difficult for anything that's meaningful to really stand out? And are there more interesting ways of reaching people?
Okay, well, if that's the case, then why not just have, as you're saying, a website that is just maybe a pleasant blue background, white type, nice layout, but no logos anywhere. Do you really think that that's going to resonate with consumers or somebody that may be curious about a business? I've always thought of a logo as something, even for a new business, that helps convey, you know, it's an overused term, identity. You get some idea of look and feel from what that symbol is. I mean, symbols are very powerful. You can't deny that.
Yeah, definitely. Sure. Yeah.
So one of the things I might put out there is Lucky Oliver's logo. The first one was done in 5 minutes. The second one was done in 10 minutes. The first one was Ariel Rounded. The second one was Georgia. It's been a business that's been around for 2 years, and there's never been a logo mark. I think the key pieces of that is creating a brand theme and an experience, which ties it all together. So the elements of that brand really speak to the user, but the logo itself was done in 10 minutes. So it's not that it's not a logo. It's just a type treatment that was done extremely quickly. But that's not to say that a brand mark isn't important. A lot of consumer brands and brand marks are important for identifying on a shelf. But the importance early stage of a business doesn't necessarily create the impact that most people think that money is going to do by putting the time and resources into it.
What I thought was interesting is when you said we're standing behind nine, I was like, there's only four of us here because I thought you were referring to these placards. And honestly, this, although I'd say they're a little off-brand with this font choice, you know, it's pretty much the brand that I have to build and grow and stand behind. And thank God it's spelled funny. Because Woodkey is a brand that I've spent some years building, but at no point do I need to make a Christina logo. And I think there's a lot of small businesses that don't need a logo either any more than I need the Woodkey logo. So it's another thing. But again, you know, if you're Target and you put that bullseye out, I remember when it first came out, it's like, what a wonderful shorthand. It's just like, we're cool. And we're us, you know. So I can see how there's a place where it becomes that little, you know, that little signature that we stand for this.
Okay, I'll just roll out next question.
Let me throw two fast points, just two really random points, and these are just more to fuel the fire than anything else, right? If you watch people using the web, right, search engine, bam, put in a term, page, scan around real fast, back button, bam, search engine, you know, and there's just like boof, 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 boof. When you actually watch their eye tracking as they're using their pages, they're just scanning around looking for something that's remotely interesting to what they're doing, and they're out of there. The opportunity to have any form of like real brand impact is guided by a hell of a lot more than the logo mark. Now, that's not to say it's not useless.
Well, not only that, but if you look at the heat maps, the logo never heats up.
Yeah.
I mean, it's always nice.
Just stop right there. Yep. Okay, so.
Yeah.
All right.
Okay, nice.
Fight.
So you're proving the opposite of what the panel is about. So you said you get what, 1.8 seconds once per month, right?
Yep.
So I want to go, I need a new financial advisor or, you know, something like that for where I live. So I search for financial advisor. I find a page. I click on the page. Top left, is the logo a pixelated piece of shit that someone made in Word? Or is it something that, you know, the company put $20 into to actually, you know, or put money into to get something good out? Like that first impression, like you get probably a quarter of a second, right?
Yep.
Totally unfair to say that like Dell, because the logo is also the name, doesn't make it a logo. That's completely unfair. You can't separate them.
I'm with
them
you.
Like
I think handling the logo type is the same thing. I mean, your font choice is absolutely critical. Bevel or no bevel. That's
I hear you. Google's Mark, very professional, right? I come there. I'm like, these guys know what they're doing. I'm just, there's a lot of crappy logos out there for things Craigslist. Okay. Mm-hmm. Just again, I'm just fueling the fire. I'm not disagreeing with you 100%.
No,
but like Craigslist, do they even have a logo? And how many people go there? And how many people trust their, I mean, literally their life's business if they're in real estate or getting jobs or, you know, finding places to live?
Great. An example is Project Playlist with a Zurb client. Can you speak to that?
Well, yeah. I mean, those guys, their logo sort of vaguely resembles something to do with MySpace. But I mean, for the longest time, I mean, you had one guy who built up that company, got like over 4 million users with no logo in that little playlist embedded in all the MySpace pages. So, I mean, I think the main point, again, when I think of
20 some million now.
Now they're at over 20 million. Yeah. So I think one of the main points there is I've just seen company after company being really focused on the product and the service first without really sort of getting too hung up on the development of that logo type, are still able to be really successful. And then on the flip side, I've seen other companies go and spin wheels again and again and again, trying to get that logo right, sort of diverting, you know, valuable time and attention away from what they really should be focused on, which is just their product. So, and I think, you know, ultimately, if they are successful down the line, more time opens up to try to get that part right.
I guess I would just say that, like, you know, even though the logo isn't important maybe for driving the company, like, you're not going to depend on the logo to make your company great or your web application great. To say that it's unimportant is just ridiculous,
That's totally fair. I think it's a relative balance, right?
Right.
But to your point about building trust, 45 million people on MySpace, who thinks they have a good logo? I mean, raise your hand if you guys think the MySpace logo builds credibility in the company.
Right.
And, okay, and so it's not, one person out of, like, you know, 200 here. So, but in other places...
It makes it more authentic.
And it wasn't unimportant, it was irrelevant, which is one even step further, so... next one. Yeah, let's keep this
going. We love
the
controversy.
Yeah, we love the comments.
If you guys have tomatoes, throw them.
Right.
I'm making sauce.
I think there's a distinction to be made here in that if you are on the site for that company, the logo is far less relevant than if that logo is placed elsewhere. For example, if I'm on Starbucks.com, I don't need to see that logo. I know I'm there. I know I got there, how I got there probably. But if I'm on South by Southwest site, and there's a big Starbucks logo and it says, get your Starbucks on the third floor, then that is going to draw my eye much, much faster than plain text. And it serves a purpose. So, yes, while it may be irrelevant for your site in your own tiny little world, out in the wild, it is an enormously powerful tool.
Yeah, that's one of the points we were making earlier was when things get distributed, though, it's very rare that the visual identity comes with them.
Mm-hmm. Right. So this kind of actually leads into the next point here in kind of, you know, what you should be doing. And maybe... Luke, you can kind of talk to this, but, you know, if not the logo, what should you be spending your visual time on and programming time and business building on? So
yeah, sure. So the only I'll make this point by talking about Zappos. Did anybody catch the 10 rules of e-commerce the Zappos CEO did? So Zappos logo, I wish I had a picture of it, has a shoe in it. And it's like Zappos and the S or the O is the shoe. They started out as being an online retailer for shoes. They originally were called ShoeSite.com. They changed to Zappos. They have this logo. They probably went through a pretty rigorous process to create this logo. When they talk about their brand, they say, we're about customer service, right? We're our company that wants to be known for great customer service and doing things for customers. The logo is about shoes. They've started selling clothing. They've started selling fragrances. So because your potential for what your company represents online is so versatile, especially in the early stages, right? You can morph into becoming anything. Coming up with something that sort of boxes you in out the gates in terms of logo might be something you want to revisit or rethink. And is it worth spending X amount of time to create that logo with the shoe when a year from now you're going to start selling clothes, or a year from now you're going to realize that your essence is customer service and you've got a shoe in your logo?
Do you still have this slide with the Nokia with the?
Yeah, we can move on to that.
Let's pull that one. It's just worth pulling it up because I think that's the other thing that we see so often is people get so caught up on the logo and they spend hours and hours and hours and they think it's going to last forever. And this is such a great example. And there's dozens and dozens and dozens of them. The original Apple logo was this chick laying underneath a tree, you know, chilling out. And it was very Art Deco. And the fact is that, you know, it's not going to be forever. Your company's going to grow. It's going to change. And we think of logos as having sort of this precious permanent quality and not at all, actually. So I think it's more about get something down, let it be the thing that you can start building your identity out from, or better yet, build your identity first, which is what you were mm-hmm. saying, and then have a representation of it, that little stamp, and then move on with your life, you mm-hmm. know? Because you're going to have to redo it. I mean, how many IBM logos have there been? Mm-hmm. So it's an aspect of you. And you can spend way too much time polishing your apples and not getting down to business.
Right. I mean, moving on to this and kind of thinking about how we have kind of evolved. I hate to use the word Web 2.0, but it's stuck. You know, you look at all these logos on Web 2.0 and you take out the colors and a lot of it looks like logos, logo types. There's logos there, but do they mean much about the business and how much have they stuck? I'm almost willing to bet that most of these identities were kind of created as part of building something, as part of that effort. And I think that many designers have thought about this and trying to figure out the value of that effort on there. Nokia is a great example of starting from one industry and moving to another. Well, that took over 100 years to get to that point of actually morphing the business. Today, you know, it's much easier to try and figure out how to adjust and adapt fairly quickly in the marketplace. So, you know, that could happen over the course of a year or two. So, you know, in dealing with startups, you know, thinking about the problem of, you know, where are you going to be in 6 months and how is that going to affect, you know, how you're positioned in the marketplace even a year from now. So I'd kind of question, you know, just how you go about adjusting for that change, because ultimately you're going to have to make some modifications.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Nokia started out doing what, logging and what else?
Rubber boots, yes.
Rubber boots.
Right. It looks like they fished for salmon.
Yeah, I know.
Right.
Everybody does
smoked
that.
Smoked salmon.
The smoked salmon company now makes your cell phones for you.
Yeah. But another thing that I find interesting when you first put up that slide, the stuff on the left, I bet you 90% of those companies plan to get bought. I mean, that's the Web 2.0 thing, you know. In Web 1.0, we all hope to go IPO and we're going to be wealthy. Now you're just going to get bought. Those are logos that are disposable. That's a radical thought. Like, I got this logo up, and when Yahoo or Google buys me in 6 months, it's gone. So how much time are you going to spend on it?
And I encourage, if anyone actually has some more questions, get yourself up to that mic. Love to hear from
you. Or insults.
Insults.
It's an option.
Yeah. Oh. We jump back to the last slide.
Jump back to that. Because I think this is an important slide, and I think maybe the meat of the discussion here is in some ways what he was suggesting is that we're really selling the other part of it, is what you should be focusing on and where the attention should be, not that the logo itself is completely irrelevant. In some cases, you know, it really can be detrimental to your business going across and you know, seeing some of the logos where, you know, someone has changed their business model. Zappos is an example. It's not a complete change in the business, but you're shifting to your customer service, and your name and your brand mark are focused on shoes. I know, Luke, you have lots to say on this. So
sure. So, I mean, I think the key points here are when Pierre Omidyar, for example, founded eBay or created eBay, it used to be called, what the heck was it called before? AuctionWeb, that's right. It was originally called AuctionWeb, but he had a statement for what it was, right? It was to create a level playing field by which anybody can buy or sell anything at a fair price. And even though back then it was called AuctionWeb, it didn't really have a mark or anything like that, it had a core, right? It had a core essence that he could talk about to people, communicate, and people could get and start interacting with. From there, they went and built a visual identity over the years, and the eBay logos had a number of iterations. But that core essence of what eBay is about, now it's the 30th largest economy in the world, 500,000 people worldwide have stores, it sells like $1,800 worth of goods a minute. So they've made good on that core essence, but it was through defining what the heck this thing is actually about and getting that right. Because you can have countless debates on what your and maybe we should actually ask this question out. Has anybody ever been through a logo design process in a company early on? Right? Did it take a long time? Or did you guys just figure it out right away? And how much time did it take?
Forever.
Okay, right. That's generally what tends to happen. I mean, you guys might have different experiences, but it is this huge time suck. It grabs a lot of your time. And instead, you might leave some of the broader issues on the table. So when we say logos are irrelevant, maybe the logo actually might be irrelevant in terms of defining what you are and what you mm-hmm. stand for and how you work. You could do that without a logo, maybe, is what we're suggesting, right. Yet people don't do it. So another counterpoint or another example of this is when you go and present a design to somebody that's the stakeholder for that, whether you're a consultant or whether you're in-house or whatever, and you go and show people, hey, here's what we're thinking for our product, it's a lot easier for them to hone in and be like, oh, I don't really like that blue, or can you change this, move this pixel thing over here, than it is to make a strategic decision about whether or not this product is right for the market and for the company. Those are very hard, challenging decisions to make, and it's very easy to have an opinion on a color or something like that. So by sitting there and focusing on some of the color and layout discussions that these logo processes tend to go through, maybe you're leaving some of these bigger, more important discussions on the table and unanswered. And then you get to a point where, well, we're not exactly sure where we're trying to go. It's something social, viral, and, you know, networky.
So if you are responsible for actually setting an identity for the business, and you're trying to push back on the stakeholders of the business or your product group or whatnot, you know, what types of things and tactics can you use to reshift the problem to something else? I mean, you guys have probably had this experience. Most of the people in the room have had this experience. What types of activities do you think are important to getting people on the right track?
Well, I in thinking about this, a lot of times when companies would come to us looking for sort of a logo redesign or sort of a design refresh that touches on the logo, it's almost something that kind of gets, you know, tacked on sometimes as part of the end, is that when you start kind of poking holes and realizing or poking at them when you feel like you're getting stuck, you know, you're trying to do several iterations, it's taking forever, you start to realize you're getting at the root of usually a larger problem, which is that company and that team may not really all share the same vision. And there may not even be a clear positioning statement for what that company is supposed to be and what's about. So it's actually a great opportunity as a designer to sort of use design to help solve, you know, strategic problems by going in there and using that logo exercise and start to, you know, ask questions, start to see, you know, again, does the team have buy-in? Is there a really strong team culture that's really focused on doing, you know, one thing really, really well? And again, I think the sort of logo malaise, the getting stuck, is kind of indicative of that larger problem. So,
well, it's interesting because I do think that there's always been this story that we say, which is we'll use the logo as a way of asking what people really stand for. But I'm not convinced that that is the most effective way, as Luke says. You know, are you talking about what the company stands for? Are you talking about your feelings about blue? Other exercise that we've done is we've done things like there's this really insane process where you write 100 words, 50 of them negative, 50 of them positive, and then you basically talk to the company and the customers. You actually send this out as a survey to customers and say, which ones do you associate with whatever your core offering is? So if you're a search company, you say, which of these words are the ones that are the ones that you really associate with search? Fast, magic, easy. Which ones do you never want your search to be, you know, slow, irrelevant, whatever. Mm. And then you use these words as a way of starting to understand what qualities are going to be really important to the product. And you can easily see how that would be a great infrastructure for design or for logo design or for anything else. Instead of trying to like shoehorn the logo into it, you start getting your values there. Or even writing, how about a business, a business plan? Mm. A business plan actually gets a lot of that stuff out.
Mm-hmm. We got some questions.
Okay. I've been stuck in the forever process of a new company trying to do branding and logo. And basically, what we discovered is, A, the people, even though we have a general theme of what we want to do for the company, we don't share the same ideas. And also, people that are involved in graphic design or working in the internet, we tend to believe that we can do everything, but actually we're not good at developing logos. And I think even if you look at the 9 logos behind you, some of them are actually quite bad and some are actually good. So I was hoping that someone around here could talk about logos that they've developed that they actually like, who developed those logos, and what the skill sets that those people had work, because I'm quite curious to learn.
Yeah, well, as I mentioned before, when I look at those portfolios, I actually look at the logos to see the overall design skills of people in terms of graphic layout. But I mean, there's tons of iconic logos out there. I think, though, there's a tendency to group the success of a logo with its design and not concentrate on the fact that it's been ubiquitously marketed to hell. Like, how do you... The Nike swoosh, for example, it's everywhere and it's been permeated. Is that the result of a cohesive, coordinated marketing strategy that lasted a number of years? Or is it because the swoosh is actually a great mark?
Coincidentally, that was made for $35 as well, the Nike logo.
The swoosh.
Yeah. So later made a lot more money later.
Do we know if that was by a student? So that wasn't even a professional
design? $35 by a student, yes. So, yeah, it's an interesting thing. From my own experience in trying to understand how you position a business, having someone that's a good writer that can articulate ideas in written form usually gets the conversation moving from dialogue of people sitting around a table to something that's actually tangible points to talk about. That's one key ingredient. I think someone with some business experience and trying to understand how you grow a business and is having an experience of actually being in a business where there's growth, they can articulate a lot of the pieces that help with that growth. And so sometimes we overemphasize things that we're not really aware of, like a logo, if it hasn't had an impact in the success of a business. So I would say, you know, get a stakeholder that has some business experience that have actually made money and talk to them about some of these issues. And I'd say, obviously, having someone that has visual design skills to be able to communicate in a visual form is extremely valuable. And, you know, being able to articulate that message to not only just for a logo, but I'd say for the overall presence of what you're trying to communicate to your customers, how you fit. I would look at it more as an exercise of the whole picture as opposed to summing it up in a few lines or a few strokes or some circles, because it's extremely difficult to try and get that right in any one time. So make it more of a story, not necessarily trying to sum it up in a logo.
There's another bit of a dark side there. I spent a number of years at eBay, and there was a bunch of people that would say things like, can you make sure you put the brand on that page? I was like, what do you mean? And what they were referring to was the logo. Like, is the logo in the upper left-hand corner? But they used the brand and the logo synonymously. Mm-hmm. And I think that's dangerous to say, that's the right, it's branded, it's got the right brand experience, and all you're doing is talking about the logo instead of, like, does this page suck?
Or you'd like it to be a shortcut, but it logos just can't do that much work.
Right. Mm-hmm. How about, we got another question here.
It was more of a comment. Wanted to speak about the Web 2.0 style logos and the progression towards the disposability of logos. You said that you had made the first logo in 5 minutes and the second one in 10 minutes. How would you have made those logos 25 years ago?
25. Well, I probably would have had a crayon in hand.
Very carefully.
Right. Let's see a show of hands. How many people have Photoshop or some kind of image editor on their laptops in this room right now? So everybody in here could turn something out like that.
Right.
So is it possible that the progression towards the disposability of logos is being partially, you know, a part factor would be the, you know, how easy it is to create it in the first place, you know, for anybody, you know, whether or not you have the training in working with typography.
Right. I think you have a point there in that, you know, bigger brands can spend millions of dollars in perfecting those line weights to try and communicate just the right message. Where everyone has the ability to create something with a simple program. So you start to question, you know, how you're going to differentiate yourself in a marketplace with a logo. You know, is it really a way of differentiating yourselves? You know, for 25 million small businesses in the U.S., most are competing at a local level, even though they do have a web presence. Are they going to be able to articulate a distinct message? You know, example, the Flickr eye, FaveCon, it's two dots. Most internet people here would probably recognize that because of the colors, but you take away the colors, it doesn't really mean anything. And I'm guessing, you know, anyone in the business could have come up with those two dots and put it as an icon there. I don't know. Does anyone else have anything to say?
I think that the broader thing is, you know, 50 years ago, your mark had a huge impact on what your ultimate business outcome was because of things like limited shelf space and the fact that people encountered your products usually on a shelf among other products. Like, so that branded mark created trust and created value and things like that. And you could measure that a bit more online. There's so many other things that add up, right, to it, that it becomes a little bit more difficult to quantify the value of that mark in of itself, I think.
One thing I would do is look at Alexa top 50 websites and look at those logos and see how many of them are actually, you know, if you're an interaction designer, good logos.
Right. So. Well, the photo bucket site, actually, that logo was done by their CTO in PowerPoint. And it's not a great logo, and it's kind of clunky, but then it's also kind of suits who they are, right? I mean, it kind of fits their service. It's appropriate for them. And I mean, the interesting thing about that was that, you know, he did that as a way of kind of getting unstuck. They had gone through, I think, 3 or 4 different like design iterations with a couple different firms, and nobody could kind of decide on anything. And it was partly because, I think, kind of getting back to that previous slide too, a lot of the designers who were coming to the table sort of had this separation between doing the identity work and working on the actual product. So they didn't really ask the questions and really understand, like, what is PhotoBook at its core? It's just uploading and linking images. It's pretty simple, right? And that's what people understand. The CTO isn't a graphic designer, but at the same time, he really understood the customer. He understood, you know, the company, the back end of it. And it was just easier for him to express that at the end of the day. So, and to your point about the tools,
right,
PowerPoint, the tool. And that was actually what they rolled with for quite a while. So,
right.
Next question.
Do you think that logos, by way of a visual communication or representation, help users remember the who delivered the great experience or not so great experience?
I think where they start to become really important, as it's been mentioned many times before, is when you're trying to port that experience over. Mm-hmm. You're going to pick one space where you're going to try to really design that brand and that complete experience. But then when you want to step a little further out, it becomes a shortcut again, but you've already done the heavy lifting, you know. But then you can blow it by not porting the brand along with the logo, you know. If Starbucks just throws their, green, I don't know, Wiccan on some Tetley tea bags, I'm going to start thinking less of Starbucks pretty quickly. So logos are just, they're a fragile shell.
Because, I mean, the topic of this is if they're relevant, but I think what we're really questioning, too, is the meaningfulness of the communication.
Sure. I mean, one observation here is looking at that cup, you know, 9 out of 10 people would probably say that's a Starbucks cup just because they know what the sleeve is, right, which is a mark. And then you've already probably experienced a Starbucks cup of coffee. So, you know, that's not to say the Starbucks logo doesn't help them, because it does. It's a mark in a local location where you're actually going and you see it. So in that case, it's signage and it says Starbucks here. It's easily identifiable.
So I think we got one more question, then we're out of time. But I just want to make one point about that cup, is that wrapper has a certain texture to it. I mean, like, if you've ever held a Starbucks cup, you can almost feel that in your hand, right? And it also says a little bit about the experience in that, hey, we give a shit enough that we're going to try and protect your hand from scalding, right? That's part of, like, there's a little bit of a comfort experience associated with that, whereas if you've ever held coffee in a styrofoam cup, right, I mean, you're kind of...
And they don't put ads on it like everybody else, usually.
No, so there's just a little bit more to it.
Okay, we got time for one more question here.
One comment, two very quick questions. It seems to me that if there's a lot of logo malaise going on, that's indicative of a problem in the design process, somehow that is being mismanaged. You know, if it's really important to spend, as you said, your early minutes, early days on, you know, getting something going, management ought to be able to say, listen, guys, don't spend more than X amount of time on this and move on. The questions. You mentioned brand mark earlier in your talk. Is that different than a trademark? And the other thing is, what if you have a disagreement with a client on the design of a logo? And maybe that's really part and parcel of why this whole discussion was held. I mean, you know.
Well, one, I try to stay away from the legal parts of it, but there's a whole other part of the registered trademark and, you know, what's a service mark versus a part of my, so that is an important part of the whole thing. Are you branding a product? Are you branding, you know, a business? And just not enough time to cover in a short hour. But I would say that, your comments on how do you deal with a client, one is, you know, it's kind of in the setup. How do they come to you? And if you've set yourself up for that discussion to happen, the second is, you know, what's your end goal with the client? If it's financial, you know, how are you going to navigate that? Because ultimately, if you're a freelancer, you're a consulting firm, you need to make money with your service, and how much are you willing to put up a fight? And three is, you know, are you going out seeking the types of businesses that, you know, you'd like to pursue working with? And that is just as much about interviewing them as them interviewing you.
If I can speak from the other side, as I mentioned earlier, I went to the dark side. I'm in product management now. And my director came to me and said, can you please help the other product managers with the designers? Because they keep coming back and redoing things over and over and over again. And we have to ship and we're slipping dates. I mean, I think it's part of both sides, is that I understand that we want to have the best possible thing, but it's the best possible thing, but we still got to ship on time because, you know, it's part of the business. And I think that there is a frustration because sometimes a product manager who doesn't have a design background doesn't even know how to say, I don't know. Is it good enough yet? Can I stop now, please? You know? So I think sometimes the designer has to, like, you know, they have their passion and they have their things they believe in, but sometimes they have to go, it's okay. We'll, you know, we'll ship it and we'll go back and we'll keep it
orange. It's okay.
Yeah. Well, I know that orange is really dreadful and disgusting. And you know what? It's going to go live and we'll slowly move it pixel at a time till we get it to something a little more decent. I mean, I think we do get caught up a little bit into the beautifulness of it. And sometimes we're hard to talk to, you know, I feel like I'm talking to myself. When I'm a designer, I'm hard to talk to. When I'm a product manager, I'm just fine. So there's a little bit of a Mars and Venus thing that I think happens, and we have to be a little more sympathetic to the other side and understand what they're going through as well.
I think the thing I keep thinking of coming back to is just your time is more valuable than being right, and doing that logo up front, it's a big exercise in being right about everything, like kind of everything about your company. And you hear a lot of folks saying that you know, it's something that can't change, but even as the Nokia example or as a number of different companies show, it can with different kinds of strategic shifts on down the line. It's something you can change and recover from. So again, it doesn't have to be right out of the gate. You got other cracks at it.
What's the French saying? The best is the enemy of the good. Perfect. The perfect is the enemy of the good.
Yeah. Perfect is the enemy of good enough or something like that.
There we go.
Okay.
Great. I think we're done here. You got a couple minutes extra. So I appreciate your willingness to listen.
Thanks.